Mall of America. For more than 30 years, it has been a retail leader and an international destination, and it remains the largest mall in the U.S. Not to mention, it welcomes millions of guests from around the world. It's huge, but it's also so much more. In this podcast, you're going to hear the real stories of how it started and why it continues to thrive. You'll hear about challenges we faced along the way and what you can learn from them. We will feature guests and experts from all walks of life and business. And along the way, you'll laugh, learn, and maybe even change the way you look at things. So if you're a fan of the mall, a brand new visitor, an entrepreneur, or a dreamer, prepare to dive deep into so much more. This podcast is presented by the Bloomington Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to So Much More, our Mall of America podcast. I am Jill Runslow, the Chief Business Development and Marketing Officer for Mall of America, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dan Jasper, our SVP of MOA Press. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, everyone.
And Dan and I are super excited to introduce you to our guests today. So we have Ann Mazenga and Chris Walton. Ann and Chris are both co-CEOs of OmniTalk, and prior to that, they both had leadership roles at the Target Store of the Future program. Chris is a leading expert and influencer in omnichannel retailing. He is an accomplished senior executive in the retail and retail technology industries, is a regular keynote speaker and senior contributor to Forbes. Ann is an entrepreneurial retail executive with over 20 years of retail marketing, experience design, and technology industry experience. She's worked as a producer for local advertising agencies and a producer and reporter for news affiliates as NBC New York and KMSP Minneapolis. So both Ann and Chris, friends of Mall of America, welcome to So Much More.
Thanks, you guys. We're so excited to be here, and I'm just happy this is happening. This podcast is happening, and you guys have come so far in the time that we've known you, so it's a thrill for us.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be here. I'm excited. Excited to talk to you both.
It's kind of fun to be on this side of the microphone versus
the tables have turned.
The tables have turned.
Boom, boom, boom.
We love to turn the tables.
Yes. Yeah.
So we are excited for you guys to share with our listeners and viewers your story. You guys have an amazing retail background. You have been innovators of really pushing the industry itself forward based on the experience, the knowledge that you share. So tell us about how you transformed from working for a major retailer like Target to following your entrepreneurial dreams of being able to share your expertise and content with the rest of the world.
Yeah, you want me to take that one?
Sure,
I'll take that one.
So, go for it. I can feel you breathing on me.
Yeah,
so
right?
I know. You want to answer this one first, and
yeah.
I'll follow up.
Well, you know, I'd love to say that it was very well thought out and planned, but it wasn't. It was very serendipitous journey, to say the least.
Yes.
The whole idea of OmniTalk, of creating a media company, stemmed from when Ann and I were working at Target. We were heading up this project called The Store of the Future, which was essentially, in a nutshell, 5 to 10 years out, why are people still coming to physical stores to shop, and how would you conceive of Target in answering that question? And so as we're doing that work, we started noticing in the media that there's a lot of information being disseminated about the work we were doing, particularly, for example, that we were putting a lot of robots into that store. And being the head of that project and Ann working alongside me, like, we knew there wasn't a robot plan for that store.
It was news to us.
And so, you know, we kind of discovered that there was a white space for real commentary in the media from a journalistic standpoint from people that have actually done retail, which is very hard to find. And so one day I was sitting in a coffee shop and I just decided to create a blog called OmniTalk. I called it OmniTalk after Coffee Talk from Saturday Night Live. And I wrote an article.
You're a terrible Linda Richards, by the way.
I know, yeah. Let's talk, Ann. But that was the impetus. And I wrote my first article comparing Amazon to the Vietnam War, like the retail industry's perception of Amazon, comparing it to the United States' perception of the Viet Cong in the 1960s. And put it out there, and the next thing I knew, people were reading it. And Ann and I really haven't looked back since. We started writing articles every week, and then we got into podcasting, webinar production, and 7 years later, here we are now sitting down with you both.
Yeah, I think the Chris hit on all of the key points. I think the only other thing that I would add in there is that, you know, we have this kind of like mantra at OmniTalk that's to follow your interests and you'll always be interested. And Chris actually was It was your boss,
yeah,
right?
My boss, Jason Goldberger,
yeah,
at the time.
Target, yeah, that kind of came up with that or that presented that to Chris. And so we've always used that as kind of a guide to direct us through the many, many phases that this business has gone through in the last 6-7 years now that we've been doing OmniTalk exclusively. But that's, I think that's really what drives us. That's what allows us to keep up the enthusiasm for traveling as much as we are, that, you know, these weeks, and really going out into the world and getting to see what's happening in the retail industry firsthand and talking to the retailers and the brands and the technology companies that are making that impact. So I think that's the biggest learning from this for me, and the biggest piece of advice that I think we end up passing along to others about our story.
Well, congratulations on being bold, being courageous, because it's not easy. And you guys stepped into a world that you weren't quite sure what path it was going to take. But look at the amazing credibility that you've developed.
Yes.
And I mean, you truly, I'm one of your biggest fans. I listen weekly
you.
As far as you have great content. And for me, as a retail leader in the space here at Mall of America, you guys make it convenient for me to be able to read headlines, to be able to listen in my car on the way to work and the way home, to be able to capture those headlines. And what I really love is the content that you bring forward. I'm curious, actually, about the preparation as you guys look at those headlines, of how much you discuss in advance of, because what I appreciate is the headlines that you share, I will form my own opinion early on. But
yeah,
then I listen to your viewpoints, and you guys don't always agree, which is great, because it then brings that those perspectives to me to process and think about, okay, how is that going to impact us here at Mall of America, or how is that going to impact me as a consumer? So talk a little bit about that preparation and how much you guys share, because you have unique chemistry, which doesn't always happen. And I think that's the secret to your sauce, is you guys really balance each other out.
Yeah, we do. I mean, I think, you know, and to give the audience a little bit of insight into what we're talking about too, we have a weekly podcast called The Fast Five, where each and every week we break down the top headlines in retail. And the way we put that together is we actually have a text thread that we use every single week where we, and to Ann's point, we just look for the headlines that we think are interesting, that there's something about them that just catches our eye, and we put them in that text thread. And then every week on Tuesdays at like roughly 10 a.m.
I love that Jill said preparation,
yeah,
because I feel like that's yeah, giving us like a lot of credit for like, oh yes, we put
it's
hours
the smoke
into this
and
process.
Mirrors, and smoke
yes,
and mirrors.
Thank you, Jill. Thank yeah, you. Biggest fan.
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah, right. But I mean, you know, media's moving fast. So you got to go quick. There's, you know, only so much preparation you can do if you're going to do a weekly show. But yeah, we meet on it every Tuesday at around 10 a.m. and we debate. That's actually where the debate happens the most,
yes,
is what headlines are we going to talk about? And then we get into the show. And to your point, Jill, we do the same thing. Like a lot of times I'll be talking about a headline and I'll have my opinion, but then Ann will say something. I'll be like, oh, wait, I hadn't thought about that before. So it's a very organic discussion that we are learning from each other as we're talking about everything each and every week. And
yeah,
it's glad to, I'm excited to hear that you do the same.
We also have talked about recording like our debate back and forth about choosing the headlines, because there is so much there that we say in that first initial thing. And then, you know, not even 24 hours later when we end up doing the recording, it's like, even then, opinions have changed and evolved since we first started talking about it. Usually, Chris makes me put a headline in, and I'm like, this is so stupid. And then the next day, I'm like, okay, this is... And they're, now I processed it. I thought about it overnight. I talked to my family or whatever. I talked to a friend or read some more on it. And yes, this was a... It's a good thing that we have this article in here, so...
You know, I love that. We've known you both for several years
yeah,
now and worked with
yeah,
you. And one of the early meetings that we had in your space, you showed us your recording equipment, and I was excited about
yeah,
that. And I have to tell you really quickly that during COVID, I reached out and just connecting with people, right?
Yeah.
We were isolated.
Yeah.
And the two of you are an inspiration, probably the primary inspiration for us starting this
wow,
program.
Oh my gosh, that's you guys.
Awesome.
So
I'm
thank
so
you
happy
for that.
To hear that.
I appreciate it. We really do admire the work you do. But and I just have to, I'm just trying to figure out how to work this into a comment. Pray tell, Chris.
Oh, how, see, Dan's an avid
yeah,
listener and
yeah,
he knows.
Yeah.
How dost thou, what is thou favorite?
I knew this was going to happen because Dan does his accents in all of our meetings.
Oh
and I'm like, oh, this is going to come up.
But what's your favorite aspect of doing a podcast, and what do you think is a lesson that can be learned from people that are starting out?
Oh man, I mean, my favorite aspect of doing the podcast, I love doing it live. I like we were actually at the Lululemon store at the Mall of America this week on Wednesday, recording a podcast from their store. I love doing that. And I love when Ann and I have to walk without a tightrope and put out good content, because it's just a whole nother challenge. But, you know, for me, I think the key lessons or things that I would impart on other people would be, yeah, podcast seems easy. Like, everyone's like, okay, yeah, I see it. I see what you've done. I've watched talk shows before, but at the end of the day, it takes a lot to do it each and every week. So whenever somebody comes to me, the question I always ask them is, okay, that's a great idea for your first podcast. What's your 10th episode? What's your 50th episode about? And finding that right format or vehicle that allows you to talk intelligently in a way that the content is king and people want to listen to, that's the trick. You got to find that format. I think we've found it. It probably took us 3 or 4 years to find the right format for us on a weekly basis, but I think we've honed that in now.
But that's what's great, is the fluidity of this type of medium. You know, mm-hmm. It's the fact that you get started, and we've been very honest with ourselves. Like, we're going to get started, we're going to learn, we're going to get feedback, and we'll continue to evolve to see what's going to connect with listeners that are out there. How can we fill that void? But you guys have also, you know, in addition to the podcast, you do write a lot of content, whether it's on the blog or through Forbes. You are also speaking at a lot of different events. So that presentational element and being able to meet and greet your fans or other brands in the industry to learn about that content. You talk a lot about innovation. Talk about how those different form factors balance each other out or complement each other, because you guys are doing it all right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing, I think it goes back to the mantra, like, what are you interested in? Where do you feel like you're having success? What, you know, if you're as advice for people developing a, you know, your podcast content, like, what do you want it to be? Is this a hobby for you on the side, or is this something that you want to make a career out of? And if it's the latter, then you have to think about what extensions you have for that content. How can you get it out there in different forms? And that's really, Jill, like, to your point, like, how we've started to get into taking our content into a live format, or like, how do we take the format that we've developed that works for a podcast and turn that into a speaking engagement? Or like, I think it's a lot of just figuring out, like, how do you, like Chris said, how do you get to your 10th episode? How do you get to the next phase of things? And how do you keep challenging yourself to keep on learning and to keep exploring and to keep being curious about the people that you're working in, the industry that you're working in? And that's really, I think, how the stuff starts to evolve, and not being set in one way. It's not a set it and forget it kind of medium. You have to keep evolving it. And I think that's really a great thing about having a partner in this business too, is like, Chris and I are always challenging each other about, like, we should do this idea. Like, we'll be on a plane talking about it. Like, what if we did this? And we
usually me doing that too. Yeah.
And I'm usually like,
let's do this. Let's do this. We can do this. We can do this.
Cool. Cool.
How are we going to do it?
How are we going to do it? Like, who's going to listen? Like, what's going to happen? But yeah, I mean, I think that's like, it's for us, it's really about just staying curious and really being boots on the ground and talking to people, talking to every single person to get every point of view, so that when we do our weekly Fast Five, we're using anecdotes that we've heard out in the field versus just, you know, regurgitating a press release. Because that's the problem that we found when we started OmniTalk Retail that we wanted to avoid.
Yeah, we didn't want to talk to ourselves. We feel like there's a lot of people in the industry. In fact, I just saw a post right before I came in where I felt like that's the conversation that's being had. It's, you know, there's a lot of conversations being had amongst the crew in social media, particularly LinkedIn, which is our focus, that likes to talk to each other. And we want to talk more broadly like that. And our aim is to talk to people like yourselves and, you know, particularly the retail executives that are out there making the decisions around the technology and how retail is going to change for the future. But, you know, media in the 21st century too, like, if you're doing it well, every piece of content can be scaled to another type of content. And the other point I'd make too is there is no bad content. Because if there's bad content, no one sees it. So there's no risk to you doing it or trying it to see what works, which is very freeing when you put your mind in that mind frame.
Yeah. And like, you can have fun with it. I think that's the other thing that people tell us about our podcast all the time, is like, there's so many, especially in the business category, like, people feel like you have to be so, like, buttoned up and serious. And clearly, if you've listened to any of our shows, like that is the furthest thing from what we do. Like,
it's true.
We're probably borderline not safe for work in some instances. We cut it off.
That's true.
But like,
yes.
we'll get to points
where every once in a while we'll get a complaint about that. Yeah.
But I'd have to say, from a listener perspective, I appreciate your honesty. You call people out and you call brands out and you challenge those brands and people and leaders. And I think it's great. And we've heard compliments that you guys have had of things that we've done at the mall, but it's also challenging us on things to look at. So I would love to shift gears a little bit into that, the industry perspective, what you're hearing, what you're seeing, what are your partners talking about, and you know, what you've witnessed at Mall of America and other things that are coming down the pipeline. Like, what does that look like for the future of retail?
Yeah, I mean, we're heading out to Shop Talk in Vegas, which is the big industry conference this weekend. And I mean, really, and this, I don't know, Anne, if you share the same thoughts here, but for me, the real big thing that we are that I am particularly focused on, that Anne and I are both focused on too, is the impact of generative AI on the industry. And right now, it's kind of hard to assess how the industry is looking at that. In fact, I'm interviewing the head of Google's global commerce on Monday at the show. And my first question for her is going to be, is generative AI overhyped, underhyped, or properly hyped? And right now, I feel like the industry, it actually might be underhyped, that people are starting to poo-poo it. It feels a little bit like e-commerce back in the 90s, how people were approaching that, but yet we're at such an early stage of it. It seems like a dangerous path to go down. And so we're really interested in it because we think it adds an element to digital shopping, particularly from a confidence perspective, that it enables people to, you know what they're going to buy in a different way, where before that was really the purview of the physical environment. You know, I could touch and feel product. I could do all the tactile things that I want to get confidence in the purchase I'm making. But now generative AI through the language models is kind of cutting into that a little bit, or will start to cut into that, I should say. And so that will mean more digital penetration going forward in the future. Now, when is the big question, but it's something we all have to keep our eyes on because the form factors of how we shop are going to change online. They're going to continue to become stronger. And that will happen at a point. And so the retail industry as a whole and the executives as a whole need to be ready for that moment. We just don't know when it is yet, but that's particularly what I'm very passionate about following right now.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things. There's also the impact on, I think, the role of the store associate now is changing a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we've been hearing from many of the people that we come in contact with. We just did store tours, especially in the grocery industry, but like as you're adding more technology into the store or robotics into the store, or you're using generative AI to create content, like what's your job now when you work at the headquarters of a retailer or you work at a mall or you work in a store? You know, what are those roles and responsibilities? And what does that mean for wages? What does that mean for recruitment, like and longevity in a role, like how you work alongside technology in your role. So I think those are the kinds of things that as generative AI becomes more prolific in the industry, that will really kind of come to the fore. Like, how do the people fit into that? Because there's still a need for people, very much a need for people. And then, but how do you train them differently? How do you prepare them to be successful and for you as a brand to be successful as a result?
Yeah, and I love that. And I actually just came back from South by Southwest. And a lot of content tracks on AI.
Yeah.
And I think the key is getting in there and testing, trying, being curious. And I think as a brand, we've historically done a really good job of that, being cautious, but also testing new things. And so now it's figuring out, what does that next phase look like with AI, and how can we support our tenants and the brands that are in this building to make it a holistic experience for our guests that come through our doors? But very interesting conversation because, Chris, to your point, it is about that new phase. What we looked at, you know, 20 years ago, we're in that reboot again of just something new that we're all testing out and seeing how it's going to fit longer term. So I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, I find that really interesting. I've noticed a couple of times going into retailers or grocery outlets or gas stations where they're using new technologies, and I'm thinking, do these people, are they going to have a job or what is their role going to be? And they don't know either, right? I think the key is not losing the guest experience.
Yeah.
That's incredibly important for us. And I'm wondering how you think that will impact. You talked about the AI portion, perhaps replacing or augmenting the need to feel the tactile senses. we're a tactile industry. The Mall of America is an experience.
Yes, it is.
What do you think we face in the future? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that came to mind when we started talking about this is, you know, you were testing live streaming not too long ago. And I think number one, it's the fact that you're thinking about it as a mall and you're providing that service for the tenants. I think we're going to continue to see more of that evolve as, you know, the malls or the center owners are really having to invest in this technology as this, in the same way that you would provide like tenant improvement dollars for a build out of a store, perhaps. Like now it's, how are you helping with the marketing and the really one-to-one relationship with the outside and the retailers and your tenants that are inside your four walls. But I think that kind of stuff is going to become more and more critical for retailers to focus on. You're not just a retailer, you're also a content creator. You're also going to be, I mean, looking at what like Best Buy is doing with their virtual store. Another one of my favorite examples is Clarins, the beauty brand. Like being able to just go on their site, whether it's from a TikTok ad or whether it's from an influencer that I see on Instagram, and now being able to go there and click a button, and now I'm having a Zoom call essentially with a beauty provider there who I can talk to the same way I would talk to if I was walking into the Clarins department of Nordstrom. Like, all of that is now at your fingertips. And so I think it's just a matter of figuring out like how retailers are going to approach that with their store staff, if that's even a function in store. What are the four walls of the store change and evolve to support that type of role? And how are you kind of all working together in conjunction to get people in the doors? But
yeah, I think to answer that question, I think the podcast that you're doing here with us today is a great example of where the future's headed, because I think For any mall to survive, the mall itself has to have a personality, has to have a reason for being, it has to have a reason for why people want to go to that experience. And so I think the malls start to take on in a life of their own in their communities. Like, hey, we're going to the Mall of America. They've got this feed on X or whatever the heck it's called now on Instagram. And it's actively engaging with the community. And so things like this are an extension of that. Because Anne's done a great job too of, in our podcast, really hitting on the message of, okay, retailers, or even mall operators, you've still got to lever up your physical experience because it's that important to get it right. And when you don't have it right, you see things like shrink increase, theft increase. And so you've got to invest in there. And so I think where we're at now is we're at this point where the entire retail industry is figuring out, okay, what is that balance? Not necessarily between digital and physical sales, but my investment in the physical locations relative to my headquarters overhead. And we don't know the answers to that yet either, but that's, I think, the next frontier.
I'll just add one thing, Chris, too, is I think that for a long time, retailers thought about like a remodel. We're going to do a remodel and then we're done. And then the next remodel will come along 3 years, 5 years later. And we can't live like that anymore. I think like when we were building the Store of the Future, Todd Waterbury, the chief creative officer and like one of the heads of that project, he said to us, he's like, think of the store as a living, breathing thing. Like it's constantly changing. You're getting inputs from what guests are saying when they come in the door, what your operations team, your sales staff are telling you. Like it's not ever going to be something that can just be set it and forget it anymore, especially not with the technology, the content that we were talking about earlier. You have to continue to evolve and your culture and budgets and everything have to reflect that too, which is a total shakeup for a lot
Absolutely.
Of people.
But you make great points. And I think that's what's important as we look at bringing brands in the building. We're looking for those brands that want to create an immersive brand experience, differentiate what you have online, make sure it's different in the store. You're creating those relationships. And it's great because we do have the Lululemons of the world, and ours is the number one performing Lulu in the country. And because they do it different, and they're great because they're a fantastic role model and inspiration for the other tenants in this building because they can see what's possible. It's not about just adding a coffee shop in your store to increase dwell time. It's really being true to your brand, partnering with other brands to really elevate that experience. So it's great to hear because we thrive on the brick and mortar experience, but we're not naive to think that online shopping, that we can combat that. We have to embrace it. We have to understand the convenience of online shopping and try to find that crossover and to invite brands in the building that don't currently have a brick and mortar presence that we can add to our community here because it just differentiates that and adds to the overall experience that we offer. That's great.
Can I switch topics really quickly?
Of course.
Chris used a word in his answer, and that
that is it
word.
Pray tell again,
and it's not. And I won't say it's in an English accent.
I was trying to figure out what word that was, Dan.
It was balance.
Oh, balance.
And the two of you are so incredibly busy. I'm wondering how you find balance. You have lives and families, and how do you handle that?
Well, like Dan just said, that's a constantly evolving, moving target, Dan.
I love it.
You could ask me, and I'd feel a different way each week. But no, I don't know. I mean, Ann said it before. Having a partner in this endeavor really helps. I mean, there's been times where we've been at a show, and one of us has gotten sick, and the other one's had to fill in. And so knowing you've got that to rely on, or I had a stroke 2 years ago, and Ann had to run the business by herself for 3 months. And so having that person there is a big help. And then I think it just comes down to blocking and tackling every week to say, like, hey, what are the most important priorities for the business? What are the most important priorities for you at home? And us just figuring it out from there. No big ahas, I think, from my perspective. But
yeah, I mean, I go back to when we were working at Target together. And for me, and I've told Chris this, but for me, it was really, who do I want to work with? And who are the people that inspire me, that challenge me, that, you know, that help me think differently, who mentor you, but you know, who do you trust? And I think that for me, that was always Chris, like right away when we started working together at Target. And so I knew that no matter what we were going to do next, like it didn't matter if we were out doing consulting or the complete opposite end of the spectrum, we're running this media business now. Like,
because I hate consulting.
I knew, yes, but I knew, like, I think that's the important thing, whether you're doing a podcast or you're, you know, working in a retail environment or whatever it ends up being that you do, like, you have to find that person or those people that really challenge you and help you be better. And so I think that doesn't answer the balance question as much, but I think it gives you a little bit more reason for being and passion about what it is you're doing. And then I think that trickles down to your family life and home life. And like my husband knows how passionate I am about this job. And so when one person has that passion, like we make it work. I mean, he's definitely, our family's had to make some sacrifices. Both of our families have, but I think it ultimately comes down to, you know, who are you passionate about what you wake up and do every day? And if you are, I think the rest falls in line and you figure out how to make it work. It's not perfect though. And thank God for my family. I feel like, I don't know. And Chris's family, I don't know how they handle us.
Well, when you love what you do and you're good at it, you're a good role model for your family as well.
Yeah.
So there's that balance. And you prioritize each week of what's on your plate. And some weeks it's work, some weeks it's family. But you always find a balance in a weird way of prioritizing your projects.
That's the one thing we always talk about too. Passion in itself is not enough. You have to be passionate. You have to be good at it. And then you have to be able to make money at it too at the end of the day. And if you can find those three things, which we've been able to do, that's what's really nice.
Yeah.
So what's next for OmniTalk or for the Chris and Ann show? What are you guys looking at into the future?
Oh man, we just got into some new content. So we just, like, about a month and a half ago, we launched a daily newsletter and a daily podcast where now it's called the Retail Daily Minute, where if anyone wants to listen to that, they can check it out on wherever you get your podcasting platform. Just search OmniTalk Retail. But that's just a quick hit, about 5 to 6 minutes every day of the top retail headlines done in a truly journalistic voice, like Ann does her best NPR every morning to put that out. Yes. And and so that's what we're doing. We're trying to just get our presence out there even more so than it has. And it's continued to work for us. And so we'll continue to do that and still look for other opportunities to grow the brand.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's
great. Just have fun. I mean, that's really what leads us to, I mean, we have all kinds of crazy harebrained ideas that we come up with on every trip that we go on. You know, it's something new, like I said, kind of pops into our mind. And so we'll kick it around a little bit. But I mean, for right now, I think this is, we're just kind of following what the things we're interested in and seeing where that takes us. I don't know that we have like an end goal in mind, just keep creating content and listening to our audience and what they want to hear from us and what they expect and then letting that lead us.
I love it. Well, from one fan to many listening, definitely tune into OmniTalk. They are within the top 10 of all all podcasts in the marketplace and number one for the retail industry. So kudos to you guys.
Thanks.
Congratulations on all your success. Thank you for joining us today and continue to follow what you're interested in. I love that line. I think that's inspiration for all of us to take away. So that's going to do it for this episode of So Much More. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of So Much More. If you want to hear more, be sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you find your favorites, including Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. And you can also watch a video cast on YouTube. Go to podcast.mallofamerica.com to leave a review, ask a question, or give us an idea for the show. Until next time, thanks for listening. So Much More is presented by the Bloomington Convention and Visitors Bureau, the official destination marketing organization for the city of Bloomington, Minnesota. Before your next trip to Mall of America, visit bloomingtonmn.org for answers to all your travel questions, deals and packages for hotel stays, and so much more.